Well, try to find a seat at the back. There are seats left up here as well. Okay. What? Well, have all of you found a seat? Okay. Well, if all of you have found a seat, I would like to welcome Mrs. Amelia Boynton Robinson. It's a great honor to have you here at Øreborg Gymnasium today. Amelia Boynton Robinson was born in Georgia in 1911, and her ancestors go back to the American slaves and even back to settlers from Europe. Since the 1930s, Amelia Boynton has fought for civil rights together with her husband, F.W. Boynton, and she worked as a home demonstration officer in Alabama. In 1965, what was called Bloody Sunday, she was to be found in the front row in a demonstration that went from Selma in Alabama to Montgomery, that is the capital of Alabama. She was badly beaten by the police and so severely injured that she was considered dead. But it didn't stop Amelia Boynton. She kept on fighting, and during the 60s, her home was the center for the civil rights movement, and she worked together with Martin Luther King, and the result was actually the Voting Rights Act. In 1990, Amelia Boynton was awarded the Martin Luther King Liberty Medal for her lifelong fight for civil rights. She has written a book about her life. It's called Bridge Across Jordan, and Amelia Boynton has brought it along today for us to have at the library, so you can go and have a look at it, even read it. She has also written a play about her life. It's called Through the Years. You aren't supposed to talk about the age of a lady, but this woman is something special. So today, Amelia Boynton is 96, and she is still active in the fight for civil rights. Today, she is an active member of La Rouge, a movement in the States that fights for civil rights and voting rights all over the world. It's not only in the States. Amelia Boynton has just returned from an international conference in Kietrich, in Germany, and we are so pleased to have her here today to give a speech on her life, her experience. But let's all give a warm welcome to Amelia Boynton, and let's hear what she says.
Of all of the places that I have been, of all of the people with whom I have talked, I get more of a pleasure in talking to young people. And this is a great pleasure to be here and to talk with you. And I definitely hope as I speak that you have questions in your mind. And we're going to have a period that if there's any question that you would like to ask, hopefully I will be able to answer it. You know, I think I was born and reared in a family that was a religious family. And between my church and my family, I realized that God made us, each and every one of us, for a specific purpose. And when He lets them stay in this world as long as I have stayed, 96 years, going on 97 years, some people say that I'm 102 years old. It makes no difference. I am very happy to be here, and I believe that we are put on this earth for a specific purpose. I believe also in every individual that God has made, there is a little bit of genius in us. And if we are able to cultivate it and to bring it forth, the fruits that it would give to the world will actually make a better world than we have today. Unfortunately, young people, within a few years, you will be taking over your political world. You will be whatever positions the politicians are in. And it isn't as bad here as it is in the United States. But unfortunately, we are handing to the young people one of the most corrupt countries in a corrupt area. And it worries me, because the first thing I say is, what are they going to do? What are the young people going to do? People like you, in the next less than 10 years, you will be running for congressmen, senators, as it is in the United States, and what you have equivalent to that here. The congressmen, the senators, the city commissioners, the mayors, or what have you. And we are handing in every area a corrupt section of the world. My job is to try to help young people to prepare themselves that they can correct the condition in which the world is today. Maybe you are not very much interested, or maybe you don't know the condition in which the world is. We have what is known as the hedge fund. The hedge fund is the one that the money from, in our case, the money from Social Security, the money from every department for the next generation, we have been trying to hold up the hedge fund. The hedge fund has been trying to hold up the banks. The hedge fund now is going down, and that is by the oligarchies, by the rich and the well-to-do, by the companies. They are the ones that are responsible. When it comes down to housing, we have over 1 million people who are about to lose their houses. The banks, and this is internationally, the banks are in trouble. The hedge fund is in trouble. The people who have spent millions of dollars trying to build up a future and trying to have a home, they are in trouble, because they are told that if you don't pay your mortgage, you're going to have to get out. Unemployment is something we need. And that, of course, if a man can't feed his children, he's going to do whatever he can, even if he has to steal. That is the trouble. Then we have crimes in the United States that are running rampant. And the most popular things we have there now the casinos. It's unfortunate, though. The casinos are the ones that people are trying to get something for nothing. And it just isn't going to work long. And the entire world is on a pinnacle. And it won't be long before it will be destroyed and will be like other civilizations that we've had in this universe thousands and even hundreds of thousands of years ago. And we don't know anything except when there is a skeleton that has been unearthed. But we can't do this in a week, nor a month, nor a year, nor a generation. And back then when I was small, my parents, particularly my parents, used to tell us that you are going to have to be an example for the rest of the people. And this is the way I feel about you who are here today, that you are given the opportunity to expand as far as mentally you can go. And when you do that, you give it to the world because it's going to make the world better. My parents, particularly my mother, was very political. In 1920, when women, not black women, not white women, but women in the United States of America was given the right to vote for the first time, my mother, with her horse and buggy, used to take me with her. I would get out, knock on doors, ring doorbells, get the people out of the house, and this is the women, and take them down to the polls, down to the registration office first to be registered, and then later on go down to the polls. Now, African Americans were only the men before them. The men were people who came in the South, who came from slavery. But they gave to their children and children's children nearly 16 million acres of land. They gave them the mortuaries or the places where they were, how they were to bury their children. They gave them the schools that are now universities. They gave them the churches. They gave them just about everything, unfortunately, that we have lost. Why? Because big business, like the malls, have taken over. And whether, regardless of whom you might be, white, black, brown, or whatnot, your businesses close up because you cannot compete with the wholesale businesses. So consequently, you have a whole lot to think of how you can bring the country back to a standard that every person will know that they are created for freedom, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I took that with me, went to Tuskegee, now Tuskegee University, and came out and was asked to take a job in the south central part of Alabama, known as Selma, Dallas County, Alabama. Having been reared in the city, I had no idea what the country was about. But I found that these same people who were descendants of slaves stayed in the same house that had no windows except shuttered windows. They had no inside of the house, only the outside boards. In many cases, they didn't even have floors. They were on the ground. And the houses were usually just two rooms and the kitchen off from the house. This is a condition that I saw. And now, what am I going to do? I'm supposed scientifically to teach these people how to live above the condition in which their forefathers lived. But lucky enough, having graduated from Tuskegee University, we had a gentleman that we were very closely associated with by the name of George Washington Carver, who went to Tuskegee, and Tuskegee was founded by an ex-slave, and that was Booker T. Washington. This fellow, George Washington Carver, was, before he died, one of the most outstanding scientists in the world. And he was the one who took the lonely peanut and made 300 plus byproducts from the peanut that they used from pavement, the pavement that we walk over, to face powder, and between there, 300 plus different byproducts. And we were so glad that this school was able to train those to take what people had and make what they wanted, and that was my job. In the meantime, these people were treated as slaves. They didn't know what it was to have a monthly income or a weekly income. There were an average of 5 or 6 children. They would get up in the morning at 6 o'clock and go to the field. They had no school worth anything. The school was 3 months long. And in the event that the boys needed to clean or clear out new ground, during those 3 months, they would be taken out of school to do this work. Now, in December, the owner, the plantation owner, would say, "John, or whoever is the head of the family, come to my house or to the store, if he had one, and we're going to have a settlement. The settlement is, we're going to find out what you've done during the whole year, you and your children." And the settlement would go like this: "Well, John, you made 7 bales of cotton. Okay, you take 3 bales, and I'll take 3. You know you can't half a bale, so I'll take that. Now, John, you know the old mule died, or horse, and you had to have another one. I've got to take that out." He didn't say where he was taking it out, but we have to take that out. "Now, we needed seed, we had to have fertilizer, we had to have something for the gold weevils, because in that section, the biggest crop was cotton." And when he begins to figure, he said, "Oh yes, you know, your daughter took sick, and you asked me to find a doctor, and you know you have to take that out, that costs money. Okay, take that out. And then last year, in December, you asked me to loan you some money that you can give your children Christmas, and I loan you money. I got to take that out." And he begins to scribble, pretending that he has the record. Then he said, "Now, John, you don't owe me but $250. Do better next time. That's the pay for the whole family for 12 months. And to walk into something like that, and the federal government telling me, you have got to teach these people. What do I have to teach them? You have got to lift them up scientifically. How can you do it and they don't have a decent house to live in?" And the man who was a county agent, he worked with the men, I work with the men, women. Now, what we're going to do, we're going to get these people off of the farm. So we began to tell them, would you like for your children not to be able to go to school? Because the kids staying out of school every year of the 3 months, if he had any time to go back to school, he'd be 15 or 16 years old, and he'd have to go back in the third and fourth grades. So rather than to do that, he wouldn't go back at all. And this is what they wanted. You know, when it comes down to dumbing people down, they have a whole lot of ways to keep them from thinking. And it happens so often that the African Americans, they couldn't think for themselves, because like the fellow who told the plantation owner, oh no, you can't say that that whole veil goes to you. Then they call him uppity. So you're going against my word? And then next thing you know is, if he makes an attempt to get off of the farm, he's arrested for some evil thing that has been planned or programmed. And that's it. So when we told him, well, now you have to get off of this farm, because this has been going on for over 100 years, it's going to keep on being like this. And some of them listened, and some of them realized that their children needed a better chance than they had. Others said, well, there's nothing I can do about it. If I get off of this place, I'll be arrested. But they did. And I don't care where you go, you're going to find that evil is there. People were brainwashed, and even the whites who were not on the farm were brainwashed, because they dare not say anything. Like one of the ladies told me, I don't like the way that you people are treated, but if I were to stand up against it, it only means that I will be one that they would turn on, and I will be ostracized. And it's pitiful. They told me and others, this is our way of life. These farms are the way our foreparents were, and we are not going to make a difference. But there was a white guy who had an implement office, and he told us, now, if you can find any of your people who would like to have a farm of their own, I will loan them money without any interest whatsoever the first year. And when they make the first crop, they can begin to pay. And we had hundreds of people who were getting off of the farm. Hundreds of them began to think. But for us, they looked at my husband and me as being a person that we got to get rid of. That's the way they felt. We're going to have to get rid of these folk. We've been there for 25 years, but we're going to have to get rid of you, because you are disturbing our way of life. Our way of life is the same way that our forefathers were when slavery was, the slaves were freed. But that was 100 and some odd years. And yet they had the mentality that their forefathers had, and that is, we're going to keep you as drawers of water and hewers of wood. Then in our country, you had to register to vote when you were 21 years of age. And we told them, now listen, with the exception of getting man to be a full-fledged citizen, you will have to register and become a registered voter. You can throw these people out of their political offices, because they were the ones who were the mayors, who were the governors, who were the owners, and we had to do something about it. So they felt that, well, you've got to go. You've just got to go. They said, if we catch you on the street, we're going to kill you. And our office was just across from the city hall. And at the city hall, on the second floor, they had the police department. On the third floor, they had representatives from the county. On the fourth floor was both the city jail and the county jail. Consequently, we would hear people screaming and hollering where they would beat them, they would kill them, and what would happen? That's justifiable homicide. He tried to hit me, or he picked up a chair after me, and I killed him. Just anything. And we couldn't go in there and teach these people how to raise better corn and better crops for the man who had his feet on the necks of them. They wanted to get out, but the system says this is our way of life and we're not going to change it. And of course, I guess today you hear something about Louisiana, which is the same system that they had back there 75 or 100 years ago, or until 1965. Well, they got to the place, they shot in the house, in our house, with the exception of telling us that you're going to be killed. The telephone became a nuisance from 7 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock in the, from 7 o'clock in, at night or evening until 7 o'clock in the morning. The telephone would ring every 5 minutes. And this is through the night, so you can't sleep. Get out of town. Your house is going to be bombed. You better not be caught on the street. And all of these things, and my husband would not tell me everything that happened. I only heard that he was, they tried to cause a wreck, an accident. The car was totally destroyed, but he lived. And everything that happened, the African Americans would come to us and let us know. And we would try to do something about it. For instance, we had an Air Force base, and the people who were there were young people, and they thought it was funny, to, and these were whites, to go to the homes where the women were left alone. They knew where the men were, maybe on maneuvers or something. It was a game. They didn't know how treacherous it was. And the police department couldn't find whomever these people were. But they caught a black guy. And when they asked this woman,